Welcome to Women on Air, a weekly show about women, feminism, and social justice, brought to you by CFUV's Women's Radio Collective.
So you are listening to CFUV at 101.9 FM in Victoria. We also stream online at cfuv.uvic.ca. And I have a really awesome show for you guys today, but first we're going to just start off with a song by Valerie June. And you've probably heard it. I am a big fan of Valerie June. And the song is called Pushing Against a Stone.
Yeah.
So you guys, you're listening to Women on Air. So I hope you guys enjoyed Valerie June, as I always do. I have two great men here in the studio with me. I have Greg and Piot, and they are in the planning stages of creating a men's circle here on campus. So first off, can you guys just tell me how this men's circle idea came about?
Yeah, so I can talk to that. So last year we had a couple of incidences on campus where men caused harm. And so as a result of that, Judicial Affairs teamed up with Anti-Violence Project, and we created a men's circle where these students who were involved in the incidents could come and discuss issues surrounding gender-based violence. And so we created this kind of pilot men's circle. It was me and another AVP volunteer, as well as a counselor who facilitated the sessions. And we just kind of explored all of the foundations and assumptions that lead to gender-based violence. And we just talked with these students and kind of tried to get their gauge on the issue and, yeah, just kind of discussed the issues every 2 weeks.
Great. And so was this originally only open to the men involved, and is it going to be open broadly to everybody now, or to all men on campus?
Yeah, so originally it was just the students that were involved in the incidences, and after, because of the good results that we had from the men's circle, we decided that we were going to try and solidify the men's circle within the campus. And so we've been in the planning stages over the summer, and we're hoping to launch it in a couple of weeks, and it will be open to all identified men.
Okay. And how would you... Oh, okay. So, sorry, it's just something that came to mind right now. So you're saying that it's going to be open to all identified men. How are you going to make it a safe space for men who don't identify as cis, or something that might already be kind of a point of tension amongst men?
Yeah, well, we've been talking about that actually fairly heavily over the last 4 months. So we decided that during the organization or the organizing part of the men's circle, that the organizing would be open to everybody, so including women. Mm-hmm. And then we just kind of discussed ways in which we can hold ourselves accountable and create a container in order to try and promote safer spaces. I don't know if you want to talk more to that, Greg.
Yeah, I don't, it's taken up a lot of the conversation around planning. I mean, it's a difficult thing sometimes to strive towards the creation of safer spaces, and so. Yeah, we've been talking about different ideas, and I think a lot of that will come as we see the people who come to the space and as situations arise. I mean, a lot of it is just, you know, having that disclaimer at the beginning that, you know, we're here to do this work, and we're here to unpack these issues, and we're all here to do that. And you know, when things are said, we have to assume positive intent and that sort of idea. But mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are some of the topics that you've already brainstormed that you're hoping to kind of break down and unpack?
Yeah, so a lot of it is kind of unpacking masculinity and examining it as a construct, and really trying to understand how that, you know, affects not just us as men, but you know, the people that we surround in our day-to-day lives, and looking at rape culture as well, and how best to address rape culture. You know, what is men's place in the fight against rape culture, and you know, working towards that. Looking at ways of, you know, holding each other accountable. You know, like how looking even very very specifically at like skills. You know, if your buddy makes a joke that, you know, is you know, putting down women or promoting rape or something like that, then you know, how do you call them out on that? Yeah, so developing some skills around that.
Mm-hmm. And how are you guys going to advertise to kind of the broader male population on UVic? So my feeling is that maybe this group would appeal to people who are already sensitive to these issues. How would you make it Like, are you involving residents or anything like that, where it's kind of inviting kind of guys who don't normally think about these things in their daily life?
Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of the demographic that we're trying to reach. So we're trying to go for like the white, cis, hetero dudes, and we're trying to really bring them into the conversation. The way in which we're promoting it is, well, UVic is actually going to have a Sexualized Violence Awareness Week, and we're going to have a kickoff event, which is going to be the kickoff to the Men's Circle. Yeah. And so hopefully we'll get a lot of promotion through that event and throughout the whole week. And yeah, we'll be putting up posters. There's going to be a website on the Anti-Violence Project, a webpage on the Anti-Violence Project website. And there'll be a calendar there where you can access the events that are going to be happening, the presentations, and the actual circles.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys going to be discussing kind of the topic of kind of racialization in these? Because you were saying that you're trying to target white men on campus, kind of this general archetype of the privileged man. How are you going to create spaces for men who don't fit that but are still part of that kind of heterosexual culture?
Yeah, so I mean, in the original circle, we discussed a bunch of issues in terms of like foundations which support gender-based violence. So we talked a lot about colonialism, we talked about racialization, we talked about rape culture. And so in terms of the circle and creating a container where hopefully all the guys who are there will feel comfortable, and that might not necessarily be the case, but we're trying. We're just kind of trying to come up with safer space guidelines. We're going to have a few kind of general rules during the men's circle, where people can call an oops or call an ouch, right? And then we're also going to try and have an anonymous box where people who might not be comfortable expressing certain feelings during the meetings, or who might have been affected by something that was said, can write that into the box, and then hopefully we'll try and discuss that, and we'll try to challenge that as it comes up.
Mm-hmm. So Craig, you spoke a little bit about what it means to be a man in our society and our culture. How are you going to be breaking that down in these circles?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, having other men around who are interested in talking about that definitely helps. I think, you know, really examining what are the assumptions, what are the gender binaries that have been created, you know, what has society told us that, makes up a man, makes up a woman. Mm-hmm. And looking at the ways in which those binaries are blurred a lot of the time, and looking at the fact that, you know, people don't necessarily fit into those camps, you know, one or the other or both or whatever. I think that's a long way, goes a long way to you know, starting to examine what is this like masculinity thing, and you know, how does it work and how does it operate? Mm-hmm.
You'd mentioned earlier that the group was open to anybody for organizing, including women. Have you already had input from women on campus about the planning stages?
Yeah, we had a few women, also a few gender variant folks who came to the organizing meetings. And I mean, in the end, those are the communities that we're accountable to in doing this work. So mm-hmm. We are accountable to women. We are accountable to the trans population, to gender variant folks, to the ones who really face the consequences of gender-based violence, rape culture, and patriarchy. And so that's what we try and think about throughout the whole process, is who are we accountable to? And I think by having it open to everybody during the organizing, we got a lot of input in terms of how the circle may function, what are the goals of the circle, but we also had a lot of input in terms of how we were kind of screwing up during the process, right? Mm-hmm. And so we got called in on some of the things that, you know, we were doing wrong, or some things that were important to those communities that we're accountable to.
Such as, can you give an example of something you were called out on?
Yeah, so one of the things that we were called out on was not establishing our politics as a group at the beginning. And so someone mentioned that, you know, if you can't establish your politics, if you can't really know where you all are coming from the various experiences, then how can you expect to actually create some change through this circle? And so we got called in on that, and it was like, it was kind of a sobering moment, because I was just like, yeah, let's go on with this like men's circle, let's like do this and that. But we didn't realize that like a really important part of that was creating the container and accountability within the men that are going to be part of that circle. And so we really had to establish where we were all coming from in terms of this work that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think that you will be able to deal with, oftentimes when you are confronted with these topics, you could become defensive of your own person and say, well, I'm not that person, I don't do those things. How are you going to try to reach past that initial wall of defensiveness to kind of get men to think about how it impacts other people as well as their own lives?
I think we take a lot of a lead from the way that AVP approaches it, and just the idea that when we're talking about these issues, we're not talking about, you know, you specifically or this person or whatever. We're talking about culture. We're talking about the ideas that, you know, create problems in our world. Yeah, so like really, really having that emphasis as to like, you know, this isn't about you. This isn't about, it gets back to that like assuming positive intent, you know, like we assume that people aren't there to cause harm. People don't necessarily want to cause harm, but we live in a culture that promotes it. That's where we need to examine things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think also just recognizing the way in which I am complicit in all of these systems, right? The way in which my identity reinforces some of the issues that are at hand. And so I think just like being accountable to ourselves as well, and recognizing that this is an issue in regards to us and not them, right? So positioning ourselves as part of the problem as men.
Have you come up with any surprising things in your planning stages, or do you have kind of a contingency plan for anything kind of going awry in your circle?
we've spent, again, like a lot of time talking about, you know, what happens if we, you know, our biggest fear is like, what happens if MRA gets in there or something like that. But, I don't know. It's very contextual. We have a system where the facilitators or the people who are committing to organizing this circle and seeing it through, you know, we'll probably have one facilitator and two supporters who are there to kind of handle situations like that. Piot mentioned the oops ouch thing. You know, if somebody says something that's needs to be addressed or has like, you know, caused harm to them or has been a trigger or something like that, they can say oops, and that gives the other person the opportunity to be, you know, like, ouch, you know, like, oh yeah, I guess what I said there would probably wasn't that appropriate or was off base. You know, this is what I was trying to communicate through that. And opens up a dialogue about that. I think, you know, in more serious cases where like things are getting heated or whatever, you know, it's really a situational kind of based thing. You know, do we need to get this person out of the room right now? You know, can we get them out of the room right now? Do we just need to kind of, yeah, disengage or, and I think a lot of those will be contextual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really great. I'm so excited that this is going to be taking place on campus. Can you tell us again when, the Sexualized Violence, Awareness Week is going to be taking place and just some more details so that people listening can pass it along to, men in their lives?
Yeah, so the Sexualized Violence Awareness Week is happening the second week of school of September, and it's a big project. It's a partnership between UVic, AVP, and the UVSS, and there's everything happening from the Vikes have offered the first soccer game to kind of have a theme around sexualized violence awareness, mm-hmm. hopefully, I don't know if this is set in stone yet, so I don't know if I can say this, but hopefully the BC Lions are going to come out and do a bystander awareness kind of presentation at that thing. Mm. Everything from the UVSS has a Let's Get Consensual pledge campaign, and we're actually going to turn it into a bit of a competition to see, you know, which groups on campus can get the most people to pledge to consent, and opening up dialogues with students about consent. And that's really exciting. The one event that's going to be kind of our kickoff event is it's a panel discussion with a few kind of guest speakers as well. Jeremy Loveday is going to come in. He's a local poet and a community activist, and he's going to be coming in and reading a poem that he's written about masculinity and you know, again, like men taking a stance in rape culture and you know, fighting it. And Byron Hurt is coming, which is pretty exciting. I know, Piot, you probably know more about.
Yeah, Byron Hurt's super rad. So he's an award-winning director of a documentary called Beyond Beats and Rhymes. And it was a documentary that kind of just like looked into hip-hop culture and homophobia and sexism within that culture. He's also done a lot of work in American universities and colleges surrounding anti-violence work with sports teams. He's a former quarterback football player. He's done a lot of work with Jackson Katz. Yeah, really rad guy. He's done some work with like the Marine Corps as well in terms of like anti-violence work. So that's great. He's going to be the keynote speaker. And then we're also going to have four men from the community who are engaging in this work. So we're going to have two Indigenous men, John Swift and Sockage Ward. Both of them do lots of work in terms of like resurging First Nations community, in terms of like First Nations masculinity. And then we also have two other members, Billy Yu and Isaac Rosenberg. Both of them have been pretty prominent men in this community over the last little while in terms of like engaging in these issues. And yeah, I think it'll be really good to kind of finish off with the panel so that we can talk about things that we can do here in our local communities.
So lastly, what do you guys hope will come out of this awareness week as well as the men's circle?
Yeah, a lot of things. If nothing else, more dialogue about these issues, about, again, masculinity, about sexualized violence, and about consent. These are things that often don't get talked about and need to be. In terms of the men's circle, I mean, I'm really excited to you know, like already in the work that we've done and in the planning process, you know, I've met some pretty awesome men and women who are involved in this work and have been really inspired by that. So, you know, creating that network, creating that sort of, like I said, almost like a support group, having men around who can hold you accountable to this work, and having the women there as well who are there supporting us in that, and us being accountable to them.
Yeah, and I think another thing that hopefully will come out of this is, like, you know, for so long, it's been women that have taken on this work, right? And so there is an accountability piece for men to be engaged in this, while recognizing that this work for so long has been done by women. And I think it's just kind of a shift in the sense that men need to be accountable, right? Men are like primarily the people who engage in harm. And so there needs to be a shift there. So hopefully, I think like a good kind of result of this would be the men's circle being an ongoing thing for years to come. And hopefully a lot more men being engaged in this issue, I think would be a measure of success.
Right. And one thought just came to my mind. So you said you were worried about kind of men's rights activists kind of infiltrating the group. How are you going to prevent that? And how are you going to address that if it does happen? Because that's kind of going against what you guys are trying to promote in allyship and being accountable to your own person as a man.
Yeah, that's difficult. and I feel like it's almost just like this not worst case, but like up there kind of scenario. Hopefully, you know, it doesn't happen. But if it does, I mean, you know, I think too, like these are the people that we need to engage in these conversations. So if it does happen, then great. You know, we can hopefully have a productive dialogue about, you know, why they believe the things that they do, and talking about kind of men's complacency in sexualized violence and rape culture and yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Piotr, if you can add anything to that.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of hoping that they'll pretty much just stick to Facebook like they usually do. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they won't be coming to derail the process. Mm-hmm. I think it's quite a big challenge to figure out what to do if they do come and derail the process. I mean, I think the most important thing about that would be ensuring a level of safety within that group. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if we have to stop the circle for that time because someone is coming to derail it, then I mean, so be it. But I guess that's something that we'll have to kind of work on a bit more if it comes up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've tried, like, we've thought about a few strategies, right? Like having the support for the facilitators, having a pause button, for example. If something gets really aggressive and really violent, then we're going to have a pause button, and then there's going to be silence, and everybody's going to hopefully think about what's going on, kind of calm down, and then maybe we can engage in that issue again. If that's not the case, then yeah, I guess we'll see.
All right. So before we close, is there anything else you guys would like to add?
Just encourage people to come out to the panel discussion. It is happening Tuesday, September 9th. We're still trying to nail down location and time. So actually it's in the Bob Wright Auditorium. There will be posters out and whatnot, though. There's going to be, like I said, lots of kind of awareness around like the Let's Get to Consensual campaign table will be out a lot within the first 2 weeks of school, and they'll definitely know when that event will be.
Yeah, and we're also coming out with a video and poster campaign that's featuring a lot of kind of student leaders, some dudes from the Vike, some dudes from Res, some dudes from the UVSS. There'll be a lot coming out. The information will be coming soon. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much, Greg and Piotr, for being here. I'm so happy that this is going to be taking place on campus, and I really appreciate you coming and speaking to us and letting people know that this is going on.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Jen, for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, guys, so that was Piotr from the Anti-Violence Project and Greg from the UVSS. I have one song for you by Lauryn Hill. I don't know if you heard it, but it's kind of in response to the resistance that's going on in Ferguson right now, and it's called Black Rage.
Black rage is founded on 2/3 a person. Rapings and beatings and suffering and worsens. Black human packages tied up in strings. Black rage can come from all these kinds of things. Black rage is founded on blatant denial, squeezed economics, subsistence survival, deafening silence and social control. Black rage is found in all wounds in the soul. When the dogs bite, when the bees sting, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember all these kinds of things. And then I don't fear so bad. Black rage is founded, fed us self-hatred, lies and abuse while we waited and waited. Spiritual treason, this grid and its cages. Black rage is founded on these kinds of things.
distortion. Black rage is founded on these kinds of things. When the dogs bite, when the beatings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember all these kinds of things, and then I don't feel so Prince of Pride, is it meant for illusion? Forcing you back into purpose confusion. Like human trafficking or blood transfusion. Black rage is founded on these kinds of things.
You're listening to Women on Air, and that was Lauryn Hill and her song Black Rage in response to the Ferguson resistance by the Black community. So we just had Greg and Piot in the station talking to us about this men's circle that is going to be starting in the new school year and the sexualized violence awareness campaign that's going to be taking place. So I hope you guys all check that out. I really feel that it's in line with the ideas of feminism and what Women on Air and social justice is trying to promote here. The next interview I have for you is from Bolo Azadi, which you heard from them last week. They're a great podcast that you can listen to up right now, and the title for this one is called White Ears, Brown Tears. So enjoy.
Hello and welcome to Bolo Azadi, Speak Freedom. This is our first show, and my name's Amal Rana. Super excited to be doing this. So our new show is a show for and about and by QTPOC, queer and trans Indigenous people and people of color, featuring writers, performers, and other magic makers, all of whom are QTPOC, to give us a space and a chance to celebrate our resistance, to be together, and to share some work. And my first guest for the show is the amazing Pragya Sharma, who is sitting across from me, and she's going to talk a little bit about herself and share a bit of her writing and all those fabulous things over some chai and some other good stuff. Maybe bacon?
Bacon.
So why don't we start with Pragya telling us, you know, a little bit about yourself and anything you want to share with our listeners.
Hi. My name is Pragya, as Amal said.
It's a nice name.
Yeah, thank you. It means goddess of wisdom. And it's actually given to me by my grandfather. And he was finding that at the time that I was born, a lot of girls in our community were being named like names like Rupa or like names that meant something beautiful. And he wanted a name that meant something smart. So he recommended that my mom name me Pragya, and she really liked it. And I used to hate it growing up. It was very brown. I couldn't hide it on a resume, Pragya Sharma. And I kind of grew into it. Now I'm really grateful for it. I asked my mom what other name she would have given me, and she said that one was Madalasa. So I'm kind of glad that I have Pragya instead. But maybe if I was named Madalasa, I would totally love it.
Yeah. Well, you definitely are the goddess of wisdom. So.
Oh, thanks. You know.
So speaking of wisdom, we'll talk more about your writing journey and where it started, what's going on with it now, but maybe you could start us off with sharing one of your writings, your pieces of wisdom.
Okay, I will. Okay, so this is a piece called Passing. I know people talk about butterflies in your stomach, but right now, that turbulent, nervous feeling in my gut, It's more like tiny piranhas, swimming around, feasting on my innards. This year is going to be different, I tell myself. It just has to be. I'm gripping my tie table, my right hand, eyeing it carefully. I have to take French this year. My mom wanted me to challenge the second language requirement, arguing that I'm already fluent in Hindi, but I'd rather not go through the hassle. Hindi doesn't really count anyway. I crumple the thin page on my schedule for the next semester as I step into my new homeroom class. A middle-aged white woman with a frizzy bob of copper hair stands at the front of the class, in front of her large desk covered with scattered papers. She rummages through the various sheets, obviously searching for something. The room is filled with tiny wooden chairs attached to tiny wooden tables. Hoping there's no seating plan, I plop my backpack by the second row closest to the door. Close enough to see, far enough to get away with doodling and note writing. Fuck, why do they still make chairs like this? This seat looks like it's made for 12-year-olds, not 10th graders. As usual, I'm worried my stomach's going to push against the desk when I sit down. I maneuver into my seat, and sure enough, the edge of the table cuts into my stomach. If I suck in my tummy, maybe no one will notice. There's no way I can hide how the metal that connects the chair to my desk is pushing into my hip, though, and how my thighs are spilling over the side of the chair. I look around the room, relieved there's no one I know here. Completely fresh start. Hello, class, the teacher calls out our attention as I eye the others. The goths are in the back, right behind the punks, while the potheads are just behind me. There's a cute one wearing a Guns N' Roses shirt, one of the few designs that I don't have. I look at him and smile, hoping he'll show some kind of recognition that we're alike. But while his glance meets mine, he turns away immediately. Damn. Class? The teacher's shouting now, trying to get our attention, but her meek presence does little to quiet the room of excited chatter. Welcome to your first year at Tricton High. Everyone around me cheers. I try to hide how startled I am, but honestly, the whole school spirit thing is just a little embarrassing. We'll be together for the next year, meeting every morning before the start of your classes. As you notice on your timetable, we're just here for 20 minutes each day to listen to school announcements, get to know each other a little bit, that kind of thing. Today, like every other class from now on, I'll start with attendance. She goes through the list, calling out names like Sarah Anderson and Tara Buckingham. I'm already dreading how she's going to pronounce Pragya Sharma. I hope she doesn't do that thing where the instructor stutter, Pragya? Like the very spelling of my name demands a question mark because it's just that absurd. As Lisa Sarney announces she's here, I expect to hear the worst. I'm not sure how to say this one, the teacher laughs. Oh god, here we go. Rag? How did she miss the P? Rag? Seriously? Ragnish? I look around. There's another brown kid in the room, but he's sitting in the back corner. He looks up. Ragnish? The teacher asks. Is that you? Rajneesh, he says. Rajneesh. His hair is slicked with oil and his clothes are crisp. I can't tell, but I assume his jeans are iron too. He reminds me of my Mamaji, who, even after 10 years in Canada, my brother and his still friends, still not so affectionately referred to as the guy who fell off the masala truck. Like my uncle, Rajneesh still has a look of India all over him. The same look I'm careful to avoid. I barely notice when the teacher butchers my name. I'm too worried thinking about the repercussion of the smile. I'm so worried about it that I'm startled when the bell rings, signaling the end of homeroom and the start of the rest of my day. I gather my things when I look up and notice Rajneesh hovering in front of me. Hi, he says. He's smiling a toothy grin and I can't help but notice the bits of crud around the bottom of his teeth, where his gums meet enamel. Hi, I reply. I glance towards the door, careful not to smile, not to show any interest. Where are you from? He asks. His voice is thick with the sound of India, and his clothes smell like mine do when I don't keep them in the closet, safely protected from the strong smell of sabji. He wants me to say I'm from India. I know he does. Who the fuck does this kid think he is? He might be Indian, but me? I'm Canadian, 110%. So fuck him. From here. I'm defiant. I don't give him any signal that I want to engage in this conversation. I don't smile, and I barely maintain eye contact. God, why do these brown dudes always think they can talk to me about some kind of shared brownness that we don't actually share, in any way, whatsoever? Oh, well, what does your daddy do? What does my daddy do? How am I supposed to respond to that? I know that's the first question a lot of Indians ask, but doesn't he get it? That's not me. He's looking for a camaraderie with someone about something that I can't possibly begin to even want to give him. He notices my apprehension as his eagerness to talk and form some kind of friendship subsides. His smile softens, but the corners of his lips are still turned upward, and he asks, "Do you speak Hindi?" I don't understand this. He quickly pulls a neatly folded piece of paper out of his pocket, asking me for help in understanding a letter he has from the school. I hope he doesn't notice that I'm sweating. I can feel it on my upper lip and above my brow, like I always do when I'm nervous. God, he reminds me so much of my mom and G. I know that what I'm about to say is wrong, not only because it's a lie, but because it's mean. No, sorry, I shrug. I meet his glance, faking confidence. I'm scared that he knows. How does he just know? I slip my arms into my backpack straps as I walk out of the classroom, leaving him alone. I'm gone before he can say anything else. I don't know why more people don't seem to realize this, but the thing about bodies is that they're not just limbs and torso and eyes and ears. Our bodies house everything that ever happened to us. Now my fingers aren't attached to my hands. My feet aren't attached to my legs. My thighs are heavy and I'm choking back tears. I make my way to the girls' washroom. I find a stall to slip into as I unbutton my jeans, pull down my pants, and sit on the toilet. I pull my backpack onto my lap as I dig for the special box I packed this morning. I lift the lid and carefully unfold the tissue tucked inside. My razor blade. My stomach's churning and I can't tell if it's excitement or nerves. I inhale as I push the corner of the blade into the top of my right thigh. The sharp pain that's shooting across my leg releases the breath I'm holding in my chest. Maintaining pressure on the razor, I slowly drag the blade across my skin. I hear my flesh tear. I smile as relief washes over me as if shame and guilt are in the blood that's trickling out of my flesh. I position the blade under the first cut and make another incision. This one is quicker and deeper. Euphoria comforts my brain as the graffiti on the door of the bathroom stall blurs with the door itself. Colors bleed together. Each cut is faster and deeper than the next until 7 horizontal cuts decorate my leg, each line a little thicker than the one before it. My head quiets, my stomach settles. I'm at peace as my consciousness acknowledges the stinging of my leg. Shame, and guilt, and loneliness. With a few slices, maybe I can bleed it all out.
Wow. I think we just lived up to the name of the show, Bolo Azadi, Speak Freedom. Talk about releasing our fears and our tongues. That was incredible and so courageous of you to share that. Thank you. How did it feel reading it on air?
Kind of amazing.
Yeah.
I don't ever, I very rarely share work. And writing is something that's always been really deeply personal for me. And it was only... I used to have blogs where I would have this anonymous identity where I would share writing there. And that felt comfortable because nobody kind of knew who I was. Mm-hmm. And but recently I've been like, oh, you know what? I kind of do want to share some stuff. So I took this writing course over the summer put on by Mia Mir, and that's where I wrote this story. And been working on it a little bit and just want to share it now. It feels really good.
Yeah, there's so much you covered in it. You talked about, you know, there's themes of assimilation, racism, resistance, passing. You mentioned passing earlier, and I was wondering if you wanted to talk a little bit about that, because there seems like there's so many different ways of trying to pass, wanting to pass, and not passing in the story. And that story is like such a common story in terms of our QDPOC experiences, and especially as they see people and they see femmes, and also... you know, both personal and general. So I'm wondering if you can elaborate a bit about the theme of passing and what that means to you in the story, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of it has to do with when I was younger, and I really wanted to be white so badly. And I knew from a very early age that whiteness was so much more than just the color of your skin. And I knew that from...
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Edmonton. Okay. So a city in the prairies. And I did grow up with a lot of brown people, and the elementary school I went to had a lot of brown people. The first high school I went to where the story takes place did not, but a lot of other places I went to did. But I never wanted to hang out with them. I didn't want to be friends with them. And at the time, I just knew that I was different. I knew our family was different. I remember talking to the substitute teacher once that I really connected with, and she was in the classroom for a few weeks, and she was super nice to me. And I just remember her telling – I just remember me telling her about our family and talking about how they're so different from normal families. Mm. I mean, our family wasn't normal because we were brown. And I knew that, like I said earlier, it wasn't just the skin color piece. It was everything that came with it, you know? Like, my parents didn't know the pop music stars everybody else listened to. They didn't know the writers of the books, like the classic books that people would talk about. They didn't know the actors in the movies. They didn't know the foods that people would talk about.
So all these assumed cultural norms that weren't everybody's norms.
Yeah. And that really are cultural currency, mm-hmm. you know? Absolutely. They're ways of social capital mm-hmm. that a lot of brown folks don't have, and that I certainly didn't have. So I knew that, like, my skin was brown, but I really thought that if I tried hard enough, I could acquire whiteness. And I could acquire it through reading white books and through watching white movies and listening to white music, which is why that Guns N' Roses reference is in there. I was really big.
Which I love.
Yeah.
did you get that shirt in the end?
I probably did. I had like over 20. It was a little bit ridiculous. And that's all I listened to. It was white boy cock rock, really. And looking back, I'm like, what the fuck was I doing?
Where's the Daisy cock rock?
I know, right? That's totally all I listened to. And I was such a big fan of Guns N' Roses. And looking at it now, I'm just like, this was the most racist, misogynist, homophobic shit I could have been, and this is what I was drawn to, because I really thought that if I made it clear that I don't like brown people either, mm-hmm. that I could be part mm-hmm. of this white club, mm-hmm. and that people could overlook my skin color, because mm-hmm. I'm just saying through everything that I do, I'm not brown, I don't want to be brown, yeah. it's not my fault, I was just born this way, yeah. it's not my fault.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I tried to do, so I tried to pass, but I couldn't.
Incredibly powerful piece, and I think it's amazing that you've shared it, you know, here, and you shared it with the mixed audience as well, which was, I think, really important for people to hear that, right? Thank Especially you. With this whole idea of Canada being this multicultural haven.
Oh, yeah.
And then really digging deep into that. But there's also what I love about your writing is there's humor in there. There's the resistance, right? That with, along with sharing some really, you know, painful pieces, there's also the humor throughout your piece. Do you want to share something else, or do you want to talk a bit more? What's your preference?
I could talk a bit more.
Okay, so let me ask you, how would you describe your writing? I've heard it now, but in your own words. I love asking people that, because, you know, the way that we see ourselves as writers can be different from how other people perceive our work.
Totally. Right?
So how would you describe yourself as a writer?
As very fluid.
Super cute, we know.
Yeah. Super cute.
Super cute.
As definitely very fluid. And I guess I say that because I don't feel like I'm like a professional writer. And I feel odd describing myself as a writer still. And I think a lot of that's because, like, I've been writing since I was a little kid, but, like, I've never published anywhere. I've never had a mentor. I've never had, like, I had teachers, sure, in high school that would be like, oh, your writing's amazing, blah, blah, blah. But I've never, like, I wasn't one of those people that was picked out in classes. Mm-hmm. I was like, you need to apply to this contest. Mm-hmm. You need to, like, I never knew.
You are the writer.
No. Yeah. And I didn't know what that world looked like. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's a place that's hard for me to claim. So I guess I describe myself as somebody that that writes more from my heart and mm-hmm. from, like, a place of wanting to sort out who I am and writing my own history in my own words.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why we need spaces like this, right? Totally. To have shows like this so we can, like, focus on our own words and celebrate them and speak our lives and speak our freedom.
Which and is our knowledges.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the idea of who is a writer. I mean, it totally raises things for me too about, like, you know, being really like, why do we hesitate so much to take on the mantle of being a writer? But it really should be, the qualification should be that we write from our hearts.
Yeah.
Which is what you're doing. So who inspires you in terms, or who has inspired you in terms of other writers or other influences in your life or favorite writers or, you know?
Who inspires
you? Could
me?
Even be Buffy, because I know you're a Buffy fan.
I've been getting a lot of inspiration from my dead grandparents. And
I think they're wearing Guns N' Roses t-shirts, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe burning them somewhere. Somewhere. Being like, what are you doing,
back
child?
In India.
Hey, do you listen to something else? I've been getting a lot of inspiration from my grandparents, I feel like. Coming from me, visiting me, my dreams and in daydreams and in, I guess, what some people would call meditations, but I wouldn't, just like relaxing and chilling out. And mm-hmm. I feel like just this presence and this energy telling me that this is something that I can do. And I think a part of it is really that, like a lot of cutie pucks, experiencing a lot of deep sorrow mm-hmm. and a lot of not feeling like a sense of belonging and just feeling like fragmented in every aspect of this world. And I think back a lot to who I was when I was a teenager, because I was so miserable as a teenager, but I was also way more confident. I stood up for myself a lot more when I was a teen than I do now. Yeah. I stood up for other people a lot more as a teen than I do now. And I wrote all the time. That's like pretty much what I did. I have like dozens of journals just from that period of being a teen, and I have maybe a couple since I turned 20.
Yeah, specific, especially like, or maybe more profound of a impact on Cutie Puck. Like, what happened for you there that you stopped doing that?
I wanted to get out of the sorrow, yeah. And I felt like I was drowning in it. And I find it a really complicated relationship between sorrow and writing, and depression and writing, and even craziness and writing. Like a lot of people, I struggle with mental health stuff. So like, and sometimes I feel like it helps exercise some of that. And sometimes I feel like it helps keep me in some of that. And both of those are important. And the messages I've been getting from my dead grandparents lately, I know this sounds so weird, so I'm just going to like...
Totally fitting.
I mean,
our ancestors are who we are, especially as Cutie Pucks.
And I feel like my grandma's been telling me stuff about depression that I've been trying to get on the page. And, like, trying to, like, write out and, like, a being, like, the spirit in itself that's living inside of me and, like, breathing into my ribs and into my bones, and that in itself is a gift. So I'm trying to, like, reclaim some of that and claim it as not something that keeps me wallowing, but something that helps me, like, helps me feel it and embrace it. Because I think, I mean, yeah, I was totally miserable when I was a teenager, but, like, when I think that my writing did that, and I did think that for a while, I just think about how I internalized all these messages that everything that's happening in our lives is our fault. It's about us.
That's what silences us too. Absolutely.
Right? Exactly. Absolutely. But we don't. Yeah. And I think about how amazing that teenager was, that she knew that this is something she can explore. Because she knew that there's fat phobia happening all the time. She knew that there was racism happening all the time. And those were the things that made her so sad. And those were the things that I wrote about at that age. And so when I stopped writing, I stopped going into that. I stopped looking into how all this structural shit
it reminds me. Absolutely. It reminds me of a quote from my the person that I took my Mona workshop with, who I see as a mentor, is Ruth Forman, who's a Black poet, amazing poet. And she, you know, loosely quoting, she talked about, I always think of this quote as to, you have, you know, in order to really like let yourself out as a writer, you have to live in the place you fear to live and write from the place you fear to write from. And that's the incredibly powerful thing about writing. And it's scary sometimes, is because writing is so powerful. It can bring up both things that are really hard, especially for us as Cutie Pucks, and things that are incredibly healing. And, you know, the more I talk to Cutie Pucks who are writing, the more we have that kind of balance that we're trying to find, in that we want to write, but sometimes we're afraid of what it's going to bring up. And how do we take care of ourselves?
Yeah.
And what comes through for me in your writing is that the fear is there, but there's also the hope and the laughter. And particularly, I think in terms of your style, I love the way you describe things. Even when you're talking right now, everything is like detailed description, which helps me feel like I'm living in the story. So I know we only have, I think, about 10 more minutes. And I wanted to do something that I should have done right at the beginning. And I can't believe I forgot about this, because with us is another amazing Desi femme, also super hot. Anushka is our techie for the day, and hopefully we'll be next time too. And I'm so sorry that I mentioned that, because I was nervous and it's our first show. But I am so thrilled to be sitting here with both Anushka and Pragya, two fabulous Desi femmes who have so much meaning and impact positively on my life, and who are both incredible writers. And hopefully the next interview is going to be with, hint hint, Anushka.
So you are listening to Women on Air on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. As always, I want to remind you all that we podcast all of our episodes on cfuv.uvic.ca. If you go to the Women's Collective tab or the Women on Air tab, everything's on SoundCloud, and you can listen to it either online or you can download it and listen to it on any device that you have. So earlier today, we interviewed Greg and Piot about the men's circle that's going to be taking place throughout the semester this year, and it's open to all self-identifying men who want to try to understand kind of masculinity in our culture, and deconstructing what that means, and rape culture and everything kind of surrounding that. So that would be a really great circle. Hopefully it goes really well, and I wish them all the best. There's also the Sexual Violence Awareness Week that is coming up the second week of September, and it sounds like there's going to be a lot of great kind of intersectional discussions about this topic. So there's going to be some communications about that, so you can check that out. We have one song by Basha Bulette, and the song is called From Now On. And I thought it was fitting as we're coming to the end of summer. So enjoy.
Every year from now on, I will wait until all the leaves turn. Wait until they burn. Wait until I see my brother give me a look that reminds me, if the truth can be told, I might go home. Would I offer to my son or my daughter that day everything that I know? What will I know? Sunset's late in the way it does at the end of the summertime. In the summertime, summertime is a mess for those of us who know it. October is closer than any one of us can imagine. From now on, it's about you. Every song from now on, I can play on and on. I can play you on and on and on and on till I am out of breath. If you are waiting at the rest when my cadence grows impatient every summer.